from city in the Midwest, best city in the whole wide wide world. Say now I'm from city in the Midwest, best city in the whole wide wide world. Say now I'm from city in the Midwest, best city in the whole wide wide world. Hey, city in the whole wide world. Hey, city in the whole wide world. I got my go gadget flow. I got my
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Rametown Riot Podcast. I am Matt Raymer, and today I'm going to be giving a solo episode, my first solo episode, so we shall see how this goes. But with so much sports going on in the world today, how could you not just be excited? This is one of the few times of the year that you have the four major sports happening at the same time. And the same one weekend, this last weekend, you had MLB baseball with the World Series, you had NFL, you had NBA, and you had NHL. All four major professional sports was going on, as well as college football. There's so much sports going on right now, it's really an exciting time to be a sports fan. So, currently right now, the World Series is happening, and the Indians are winning this series right now 3-2. However, the Chicago Cubs look like they're going to win tonight against the Cleveland Indians, forcing a Game 7 tomorrow night. So I think that is fascinating. And wow, what a game. Like, the MLB cannot be more happy than it is now, because the TV ratings are through the roof right now, highest they've been in years. And you have the Cubs, who are the easiest, most marketable team in the MLB, in the World Series, was not won a World Series since 1908, and forcing a Game 7 in a comeback fashion against another team, the Cleveland Indians, who have not won a World Series since 1964, I don't think Major League Baseball could ask for anything else. This is like kind of a dream scenario for MLB, and let's see what the resounding impact from this Game 7 will be. Will the ratings continue to spike? Or will it fall back into the same bad ratings, bad publicity, bad attention that MLB has been seeing the last 5 years, 5 to 10 years, really? And the constant decline in interest from our youth, as well as just little middle age, is pretty staggering in MLB baseball. So I'm just really, really fascinated to see how this World Series, how this postseason will impact the future of Major League Baseball. I think it has potential to have resounding impact. However, I think baseball will have to do key things to keep the interest, keep the intrigue. I mean, the Cubs are going to do their part right now, especially if they win World Game 7. The Indians are a great story, all these great things. They haven't won it forever either, especially with the Cleveland Cavaliers winning and all this thing. Cleveland sucks, all this stuff you keep hearing, right? However, Major League Baseball wants the Cubs to win. There's no doubt. The Cubs are marketable. The Cubs are such an historic franchise that Major League Baseball wants the Cubs to win. So let's see what happens. What is the resounding impact, influence that this happens on the future of Major League Baseball? And I will dive in a little bit into this Game 7 matchup, as you're going to have Hendricks, who was, believe it or not, the best pitcher on the Cubs this year. Hendricks is not, I'd say, a household name even at this point, with the likes of like Lester and Arrieta, who are also on the Cubs staff. And it'll be Hendricks facing Corey Kluber. Or Corey Kluber might be the best pitcher that nobody knows about in baseball. He's won a Cy Young Award. However, he's still not a household name for the Indians. And Corey Kluber has already dominated the Cubs in this World Series, and now he's about to start Game 7. Let's see what he can do. He's going off another short rest, and it's going to be Kluber versus Hendricks. But the coolest thing about this Game 7 is that you can't hold anything back anymore. It's Game 7. There's one more game of this Major League Baseball season. What can you do? How can you possibly win this game? All cards are on the table. Say you go out there and Hendricks is struggling in the first inning, boom, throw John Lester in there. John Lester's going to be available. Throw John Lackey in there. Another for the Cubs. Throw all these starting pitchers are going to be coming in relief. Could be pitching one out. It doesn't matter. You try to put all your cards on the table to win this game. And we all know if the Cleveland Indians get an early lead and carry it to the later innings, most likely this game is going to be won by the Cleveland Indians. Their bullpen has been insanely good. They resemble a lot of the Kansas City Royals last year with that insanely good bullpen. And Miller is so good that he almost seems unhittable at this point. And then Davis comes in. He is fantastic as well. So the Cubs, it's so important to get an early lead. And yeah, it's going to be really fun to watch. And I think it makes me excited for baseball again, which has not happened very often. I mean, baseball, in all reality, is pretty boring in a lot of sense compared to a lot of today's sports, in my opinion. You're talking a regular season game, the 100th game of the season, and really, you have like the two level 5 starters pitching against each other. It's really not much intrigue. It's really hard to watch. So I just think that, I'm not saying like that game's ever not going to be boring. I don't really give a crap if the Cubs win the next 5 World Series. That game's still going to be boring. But my point is, baseball needs to do something to get this spark. And I really feel like this World Series has a chance, and it's been so exciting. So we'll see what happens here. One of the big points I want to get into real quick is the number 2 hitter tonight was Schwarber, the Cubs player that's came out of nowhere, the player that got hurt in the 5th game of the season this year. One of the great, great young players they have on the team, to add to all the other great ones they have. But he came into the postseason thinking no way he's going to play. Also, he gets cleared. And now 5 days before the World Series starts, he starts swinging the bat and running fully. And he gets cleared by doctors, in other words. And then it goes into like 2 days before the World Series. Oh, well, maybe he'll play. Maybe he won't. We'll see what happens. Maybe he can swing the bat. He's got a good bat. And sure enough, you go in there and he lights it up. He starts playing great. And what are they doing? Game 6 in Cleveland? They move him all the way to the second hitter in their lineup as a DH. The number 2 hitter. You're talking about a Cubs lineup that has not changed much all season. It stayed the same. They put him in the second hitter. That's how much trust they have in a guy that missed the entire regular season, most of the postseason besides the World Series. He's batting second in the World Series. This story has already gotten so much hype, but it deserves all of it it can possibly get. You're talking about a player that is doing such an impossible feat, it seems like. Everybody always talks about how hitting a major league pitch is the hardest thing to do in sports, right? Well, if it's the hardest thing to do in sports, he is absolutely kicking that ass, right? He is going in there, he is batting like 400 in the World Series without seeing pitches in such a long time. Fascinating story. So I imagine he's going to bat second in the lineup in Game 7, and see what happens. It really seemed to spark this lineup here in Game 6, and you had the 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 hitters for the Cubs just be in out of their mind with Rizzo and Bryant homering, and then Addison Russell getting a grand slam. Woo! What a Game 6! Damn, that was exciting. So, just to finish off this Major League Baseball, really, really, really cool what is happening now, and let's see if it can continue. Let's see if this what happens, how this game series, the long-lasting impact, and everything that can go into it. All right, so let's transition now. A little college football, and as you know, this is we are from Albuquerque, New Mexico, so we root on our New Mexico Lobos nonstop, diehard, and the Lobos football team, believe it or not, are 5-3 right now. 5-3. After that shaky start, all the criticism, all the bad things that are going on, losing to Mexico State by 1 point, blowing a 21-0 lead to Rutgers, the Lobos are 5-3 and dominating conference play. They've only lost one game in conference to Boise State, who we all agree is at the top of their game, even though they did lose to Wyoming. Boise State lost to Wyoming last weekend. Very interesting. But back to the Lobos. The Lobos beat Hawaii at Hawaii 28-21. So this is a very close game. And my thing that I really want to touch on with this game is It was a very close game at the end. In the fourth quarter, it was 21-21. About 6 minutes left. The Lobos defense comes up with a big play. The defense. We're not even known for defense for since Rocky Long. Since Rocky Long, the Lobos are not known for a defense. And I'm saying now, not this season. They're still not known for their defense. However, the defense comes up with the game-winning play with a fumble return for a touchdown to make it 28-21. So I think that is just so great for the defense to carry some momentum and also to hold off that victory. They didn't allow Hawaii to score again. 28-21, the Lobos won. And it kind of goes back to what I was talking about last week where the mental toughness. I mean, the Lobos have all these problems. So much losing over the years that me and Lucas Reed talked about last week. And it seems like that slowly is starting to turn. These close games. I know the state wasn't great. They had a tough one there and Rutgers. However, it seems like it's showing some mental. Sorry about that. Quick little technical difficulty. But as I was saying, the mental toughness for the Lobos. If you remember last year, they caught fire in the month of November to really propel themselves into the bowl season. They really propelled themselves by beating Boise at Boise and other big wins on that schedule. So the Lobos seem to be improving throughout the season, which is fantastic. Shows their mental toughness, shows their commitment to getting better. And I, as a Lobo fan, that's what I love to see. And if they really can ride out this streak, who knows where this season can take them? They are 5-3. They're one game away from being bowl eligible. And to touch on this real quick, you know what the sign of a good coach is? You know what the sign of a great coach is? You have all these wins, losses, you have a lot of things, but in my opinion, does a team improve as the season progresses? I think that is such a vital part that is 100% attributed to coaching. Because how do you get the most out of your players? You go through your first game. You go through your second game. You start understanding where players fit. And you start understanding what your players will excel at against real competition. So I think that's fascinating. This Lobos obviously the last two seasons have improved significantly as the season progresses. I think Bob Davey deserves a tremendous amount of credit for this. That is the sign of a great coach, people. That is the sign of a great coach. You improve throughout the season as the season progresses. How is he utilizing his talent? How is he game planning? How is he scheming? How are all these things working? How is the coaching staff adapting to his team? It's really fascinating to watch, and I want to give tremendous props to Coach Davey. So, talk a little about the Lobos real quick. The Lobos right now are 38th in total offense in the country and 20th in the country for points per game. So total offense is based off of yards per game. 20th in the country for points per game. That is fantastic. 20th in the country for points per game. Today's college football, that is extremely impressive. Specifically that we run an option offense. We run an option offense, and we're 20th in the country in points per game. So we have all these naysayers talking about our offense. We need to do all these things. We're 20th in the country in points per game. Our offense is getting the job done. I understand getting a quarterback to make those clutch, wide-open throws in an option offense is essential. However, our offense is performing to an ultimate level right now. Ultimate level. So, to further on some of these offensive stats, Terrion Gibson, if you have not looked up his stats this year, they're pretty mind-boggling. He is averaging 10.7 yards per rush. Over 10 yards every time he touches the ball. And we're not talking he has like 20 carries. He has like 60-plus carries. He's number one in the country for average rushing yards per attempt. Number one in the country. Not Leonard Fournette. Not Dalvin Cook from Florida State. Terrion Gibson. Your University of New Mexico Lobos. Tyron Owens, the other running back. He's number four in the country. Averaging 8.2 yards a carry. You're telling me you have two running backs on the same team in the top four in the country on average yards per carry? That is insanely impressive. And is a you have to give a lot of props to the offensive line. Offensive line are oftentimes players that are never, ever, ever, ever recognized. However, you don't win. You don't win if you don't have a great offensive line. You never win. Looking back at all the previous national title teams, all the previous NFL, offensive line dictates winning. Look at the Dallas Cowboys right now. Look at the Dallas Cowboys. Best offensive line in football. They've lost one game. Rookie quarterback, rookie running back. You know why they're so good? Their offensive line is dominant. Not just good, dominant. So for the New Mexico Lobos, really, really impressive offensive line and really well job coaching. The best offensive coordinators doing work down there. And yeah, the offense is doing great. But hold on. Let's not give it all the credit to the offense. The most surprising statistic that I found on the New Mexico Lobos, Tarion Gibson was close at number one in the country at over 10 yards of carry. But the Lobos defense is 36th in the country for total defense. So total amount of yards given up per game, the Lobos are 36th in the country. That is a massive improvement. Massive. Granted, they have given up points, which points are how you lose games. However, you are seeing improvement by not giving up consistent driving yards. Your defense is getting off the field. What the Lobos defense has got to eliminate is the big plays. Big plays are what are killing the defense. You narrow those big plays down, I think the Lobos might have something to be special here. So Lobos are 5-3. They are welcoming Nevada into University Stadium Saturday night. Albuquerque fans, get your ass out there. Go support the Lobos. I will be there. I have my whole posse. It'll be so much fun. Nevada is 3-5 on the season. The Lobos are currently 15-point favorites going into this game. Very, very good news for Lobos. 15-point favorites just shows that we're gaining respect from Vegas. Nevada's lost some close games, though. They only lost to Wyoming by 8 points. They lost to San Jose by 4 points. They have not won these close games that could really separate a season. So my point of that is Nevada, the Lobos should be heavily favored, and we should win this game. However, I don't think it's going to be an easy game. It's a division game, conference game, and it's going to be tough. And to add to it, Nevada is coming off a bye week. Those teams are always scary. You come off a bye week, it is always scary. An extra, especially for teams that go against the option offense that the Lobos run. Nevada has an extra week to prepare for that triple option, which I guarantee will reduce the number of big plays by at least 2 big plays. And we're talking big plays, we're talking 20-plus yard plays. And by doing that, can the Lobos offense methodically march down the field and score? Because we are a big play offense, there's no doubt about it. However, Nevada is averaging giving up 270 yards rushing a game. The Lobos should feast on that. But if you look at the schedule, the Lobos have a great chance to win the most games this season they've won in a long time. So Lobo fans, this is what I'm asking you. Please go support your Lobos this weekend, 8:15 against the Nevada. All right, we'll talk one more college football game here because really this weekend, for the big picture for the playoff standings, Alabama-LSU. You're talking about such a rivalry. This is one of the biggest rivalries in college. It's a little different than Alabama-Auburn, who's in the same state and they have insane rivalry. But I feel like Alabama-LSU is just, it's always just such a grind. It seems like it's just such a battle. However, Alabama's won the last 5 meetings against LSU. 5 meetings. LSU has not beat them since they won that like 9-6 game back when the same season when they met in the national title game. So a long time ago. Alabama's currently 8-point favorite, 65% chance of winning. However, LSU is undefeated with their interim head coach Ed Orgeron. And they just seem like they have a little more swagger, a little more upbeat, a little more emotion. Football is a game of emotion. And I feel like they have a little more emotion. So I think it's something really key, really fun and exciting to watch. But if LSU wants any chance to win this game, it's going to come down to their best player. Their best player, arguably the best player in college football, how is he going to perform? And I'm talking about Leonard Fournette. Last year, LSU, Alabama, Leonard Fournette had 19 carries for 31 yards. You don't have to be a mathematician to break that down. That's freaking awful. Less than 2 yards a carry, your best player. If LSU has any chance, he is going to have to get going. He is going to have to – he's not going to be able to control the line of scrimmage 100%, but do enough to spark that offense and, hey, maybe break one or two long runs. Long runs. We're talking touchdown runs. So I think Bama's still going to win this game. I think Bama has one of the best defenses I've seen in college football in I don't know how long. It seems like they just have they have five players on defense that are better than any player on your offense. That's what it just seems like. I don't know. That's just a random thing I throw out there, but that's what it just seems dominant that way. Just absolutely dominant. Maybe more. You can arguably say that 8 of the 11 players in Alabama's defense are better than anybody on the opposing team's offense. So that's why you got Leonard Fournette this year, week. Let's see what he can do. All right, we're going to take a quick short break here. We're going to come back. We'll get a little bit of NFL and NBA talk. All right. Welcome back here to the Ramtown Riot. I am Matt Raymer, and I am solo today, like we were saying. And Bobby Lloyd had to work tonight. Bobby is doing a big show downtown as one of the head bartenders of the show, so he couldn't pass it up. And, you know, we still got to talk sports. We got to do it. We got to get as much going as we can. So let's jump into the NFL. How I want to start this is kind of an interesting thing, because I just think that this season in the NFL, there's a lot of parity. And what I mean by parity is there's a lot of decent teams, average teams, a little above average teams, it seems like, this year. But there's really only one team that has standed out so head and heels above every other team. It's kind of mind-blowing. If you look at it, the Patriots are so far, just from the eye test, they look so much better than every other team out there right now. I mean, who's competing for second? Who? Like, if you look at this, are we going to put the Dallas Cowboys at second right now? Dallas Cowboys? My Dallas Cowboys are the only other team in the NFL that has lost only one game. But they have a rookie quarterback, a rookie running back. Is there any way in hell we put them up there? I don't think so. I don't think I could trust them in the playoffs. I think it's fascinating what they're doing. I think they're a good, solid team. But the Patriots are so far ahead of everybody right now. You look at the Cardinals, a team that was projected to go to the Super Bowl. I picked them to go to the Super Bowl, represent the NFC. What do? They get their ass kicked by Carolina this week. Carolina's the defending Super Bowl champs. Oh, the Carolina's back in. Guys, Carolina's won 2 games this season. Carolina's 2-5. 2-5. A defending NFC champion is 2-5. The Denver Broncos, 6-2. They look good, right? How can you trust that offense? Trevor Siemian has looked decent. He's looked like he's capable of going in and winning a playoff game. But do you honestly think he can go into New England, go into Gillette Stadium and beat New England Patriots? It doesn't even seem remarkably close. Like even, I can't even seem like I think of a scenario of that happening. Unless Von Miller goes off and sacks Brady 6 times. It's just crazy to me. Are we going to put the Oakland Raiders, the hottest team right now? There's no way yet. Honestly, my team that I'm still going to stand with as the second best team in the NFL is the Pittsburgh Steelers. I trust Ben Roethlisberger when he comes back. I think that defense can get healthy. Hayward's coming back. Shazier's an animal in linebacking core. And I think that offense can compete with New England's offense. That is the only reason why I will put them at 2. And speaking of these Patriots, very, very interesting trade. The New England Patriots traded Jamie Collins to the Cleveland Browns for a conditional late third round pick next year. So if you guys know who Jamie Collins is, Jamie Collins is a very good outside linebacker for the Patriots. Outside middle linebacker, he's kind of a hybrid a little bit. Outside middle linebacker, he does a little bit of it all. And he made the Pro Bowl last year. And now he's gone to the Browns. It's stunning. And if this was any other team in the National Football League besides the Patriots making this move, I think it would be getting absolutely trashed on. Absolutely trashed on. Jamie, the big kicker on this one for the Patriots side is Jamie Collins is an unrestricted free agent after the season, and he's going to be looking for big-time money. Big-time money. And most likely the Patriots weren't going to re-sign him this offseason considering all the other players they need to re-sign. However, my point is you have such a good chance, how I just said, by far Head and Hill's the best team in football right now, to win the Super Bowl this year. You are sacrificing, I think, a pretty big piece of your defense for the future that could impact this year winning the overall Super Bowl. Don't forget, they just traded Chandler Jones to Arizona this offseason. What did they get back in that trade? A second rounder and Cooper? Cooper's not even on their team anymore, that offensive guard. Complete bust in the NFL. And Chandler Jones, oh, he's 5 sacks and he's the leading sack person for the Cardinals right now. If they had Collins and Chandler Jones on this team right now, holy crap, the Patriots would be scary. They already are scary. But my point is that it's just crazy. You have a team that trades away one of your best players for a conditional late third round pick in the middle of the season? That never happens. The NFL trade deadline is such a bore. Nothing happens. You have all this hype. Then ESPN tries to do all these things to make all these scenarios happen. Nothing ever happens at the NFL trade deadline. Playbooks are too complicated. The only position I can see that you could fill is like a D end. You could just tell them to go run and sack the quarterback. Go run a twist. Go run a game. That's about it. It's just mind-blowing. How the Patriots are going through this just blows my mind. However, even after this trade, I still think they're Head and Heels the best. Anyway, let's transition here to, I'm going to read off stats from two players in the NFL right now. Two players, all right? And I'm going to attach a name to him after the fact. I just want you to think about these stats. One of his quarterbacks has 2,636 yards passing this year, 19 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, 69% completion percentage, and 115.8 QBR. 19-4 TD interception ratio, leading the league in yards passed. That is Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan is back to being Matty Ice right now. Remember when he first came to this league and he took the league by storm? And then he had a couple, last two years have been down years? Seems like he is back to having that swagger. Let's see if he can stay consistent. But right now, he is playing at MVP caliber level. Impressive. The next player, another quarterback. 2,321 yards passing, 17 touchdowns, only 3 interceptions, 66% completions, 101 QBR. That player is arguably the most exciting young player in the NFL right now, Derek Carr, the quarterback for the Oakland Raiders, the gunslinger. He's not just a gunslinger right now. He is an efficient gunslinger. A little bit of a difference. Brett Favre didn't set the NFL history record for most interceptions for no reason. He was a gunslinger, but he looked a little reckless at times. Right now, Derek Carr has 3 interceptions. 3. Plus 14 TD to interception ratio. Really interesting, and the Raiders will go as far as he takes them this year. And the Raiders are 6-2. Fascinating team. My brother, my family's diehard Raider fan, so I follow him closely. Even though I'm a 49ers fan. Very interesting family dynamic that way. But they've had so many close games this year, and they're 5-0 on the road. 5-0. I don't care who you're playing. You're 5-0 on the road. You're a solid football team. And not just on the road. You're playing on the Eastern time zone at 11 o'clock time slot. The statistics, the odds of you going 5-0 on the road, and 4 of your games have been in the Eastern time zone at 11 a.m., I bet the Raiders, complete random number, had a 1% chance of doing that before the season started. No one ever, it's so hard for a West Coast team to travel to the East Coast to play the 11 o'clock time slot. The Raiders went up four times. Won all of them. Very impressive. But just throw out some stats real quick, just to kind of show you something real. Another quarterback, 1,319 yards, 12 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, 73% completion percentage, 134 quarterback rating. It's not that hard to guess this one. This is Tom Brady. This is Tom Brady right now. Tom Brady missed 4 games this season. 4 games. Do you know what he has? Right now he has 12 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. 12 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. He's played 4 games. It's remarkable. He's playing arguably the best he's ever played this year. So enough on the Patriots. I've been all over them, but it's crazy. Some other quick NFL hits. Jamar Charles has been placed on injured reserve now for the Chiefs. Wow. This is a guy that, coming off ACL injury, they were not rushing him back. Seemed like, oh, okay, he's going to go week 5 and he'll be full go. Nope. Jamar Charles, looks like his season is over. His knee keeps swelling back up, and they don't know what's going on. He's not Adrian Peterson. He's not coming back in 8 months rushing for 2,000 yards. But another interesting one, we'll touch a little quick fantasy real quick. Jamal Charles. Jamal Charles, injury reserve. Spencer Ware just had a concussion last week. Assuming he misses one game, he is now going to be a top 10 running back the rest of the season. But for this week, Charcandrick West, if you can pick him up, pick him up. Another interesting one, Percy Harvin is coming out of retirement and joining the Bills. The Bills can't have any receivers stay healthy. Their top 3 receiving wide receivers going into this year, top 3 are all injured. Percy Harvin coming out of retirement. I don't think he's going to do much. He's awful for a locker room. But last thing I want to say real quick, that Cowboys and Eagles game was a fantastic game. Dak Prescott showed a lot of poise, a lot of composure, coming back and beating the Eagles. But damn, my point is, it's such a big game for the Cowboys. The Cowboys separated themselves in the NFC East now. They have a little cushion. They protected home field and have all the momentum in the world. We don't have to talk about Romo coming in for Prescott anymore. Prescott's starting. There's no question about that anymore. But huge win for the Cowboys. Huge win. All right. Well, I think that's probably enough NFL talk here. Let's transition to a little NBA. The NBA is full slate, full go. Everything's happening now. Early in the season, people probably don't care very much, but I'm still fascinated. I think it's extremely interesting. How are these teams going to come together? All of these free agent transitions, all this hype that happens all summer, how are these rookies going to impact? So I'll start with this. There are currently 6 3-0 teams in the NBA. Only 3-0, so we're not saying much. You know, it's not that big a deal, right? But the Bulls, the Chicago Bulls, who got Rajon Rondo, the Bulls who traded Derrick Rose, are now 3-0. Very unconventional team because they have no shooting, but interesting, 3-0. The Atlanta Hawks are 3-0. The Atlanta Hawks got rid of arguably their best player, Al Horford. You know who they replaced him with? Dwight Howard. I don't care how much negativity is surrounding Dwight Howard last year, he is still a beast. There's still very few people in the NBA history with a body like him and athletic ability as him. They look really good right now. Granted, small sample size. No surprise, the Cleveland Cavaliers, 3-0. The Spurs, 3-0. Gasol and Aldridge together in that front court, both 7-footers, can really score. Interesting for the Spurs. And Kawhi Leonard, he's going to be fighting for MVP this year. The next team, the Los Angeles Clippers. Maybe their last year to run for a title, but they're starting strong, 3-0. And then the Oklahoma City Thunder. No Durant. It's okay, we'll get Westbrook. He had 2 triple-doubles in his first 3 games. He's killing it. Granted, the competition was pretty weak. Either way, They're 3-0. So, my little thing that I was going to say here is, what team am I most surprised here? What team am I most surprised that is 3-0 to start the NBA season? And the obvious one that stands out was the Thunder. You'd think that they would have a little transition time without Durant. However, I was looking at their schedule. They've had the weakest competition so far this season. Mine is actually going to be the Spurs. The San Antonio Spurs, the team that is going to be arguably competing for the number one seed. I think they'll get the 2 seed in the West. I think the Warriors will still prevail. But they beat the hell out of the Warriors. They've beaten good teams this season. And they've looked very impressive in doing so. So I'm going to say the Spurs are my most surprising team. Closely by the Bulls, just because the Bulls' continuity is going to be very interesting. But I want to touch on my favorite team real quick. Golden State Warriors. The Golden State Warriors got the biggest free agent of this offseason. Kevin Durant, NBA superstar. Top, I don't know, whoever says it. Top 3 player in this NBA. Whatever you want to call it. Absolute superstar. Already going on a team full of superstars. Curry, Thompson, Green. All All-Stars and Olympians. So, I kind of have a weird take on them, though. I've watched 3 games now this season, as tonight they beat the hell out of the Portland Trailblazers by like 40 points. It looked like the Warriors that we thought would happen going into the season. They've only lost 1 game. They lost the Spurs to start the season. And it's just kind of weird. Like, I'm a Warriors fan. All Warriors 100%. It's just, I don't have that same feeling watching them yet this season. And I can't really pinpoint why. I think the reason why they were so fun to watch the last 2 seasons, and again, I'm not a bandwagon. I've been a Warriors fan for 10 years now. But the reason why they were so fun to watch the last 2 seasons is they had that continuity. They had the way they played together offensively and defensively that was so much different than every other team in the NBA. They knew where the other player was going to be. They led the league in assists both years by a wide margin, and it looked just so fluid. It didn't look like they were stressing things. It wasn't all one-on-one basketball. And defense, they helped. It just looked so good. And it's kind of weird watching them this year now, because there is that transition process. There is that phase. I don't care if they're winning right now or not. They're figuring out their pieces. They're replacing a lot of players. Andrew Bogut, great defensive player. Harrison Barnes, their young star, I can call him a star, but their young player that was molding into something special, hopefully. Key piece. Mo Buckets, Maurice Spates off the bench, they're having to replace. So it's just not that easy. So it just, I think the hardest thing is just watching them now, and it's been a little bit more one-on-one on offense because they're still filling each other out. And defense, that help defense is not there yet. They're really struggling defensively right now. Lucky their offense is so good. But Zaza Pachulia, their center, let's really see what he can do and see how he can hold down that fort. Again, I'm not worried about the Warriors. I still think they're the Western Conference favorites and battle the Cavs in the finals. Like everybody else says, it's nothing too exciting that way. But yeah, that was my take. Kind of weird on the Warriors. I'm wondering if any other Warriors fans out there kind of feel the same way. Email us, hit us up on RaintownRiot@gmail.com, or hit us up on Twitter, and let's kind of just get your take on it, and we'll see what we say there. See if I'm the only one out there that kind of feels that way. Speaking of the Warriors, that's kind of a funny thing here. LeBron James had a Halloween party. LeBron James, you know, the king, just beat the Warriors, came back, beat the Warriors in the finals, on top of the world, all these things. He had a Halloween party, and he had multiple things at this party that just took nice, solid jabs at the Warriors. His band that was playing at the party, because he's LeBron James, a lot of money, live band, of course. You expect nothing less. His band was called 3-1 Lead. 3-1 Lead. Well, if you don't remember, the Cavaliers came back from 3-1 deficit in the NBA Finals. And you thought, okay, well, maybe that was something, a coincidence or something. He had cookies, Halloween cookies. They're like skeletons and tombstones and stuff. He had them labeled Curry and Thompson. That's kind of taking a direct jab right there, right? Honestly, it doesn't bother me. I kind of like it. I think it's fun. You want players to be competitive. You want them to not like each other. Old school basketball status. I like it. Let's get as much intrigue as we possibly can. All right, that'll wrap up a little NBA talk there. We'll take a quick short break, and we'll wrap it up here with a little Rametown Riot. All right, back now on the Rametown Riot. We're going to finish up here with a little Rapid Riot. All right, by myself doing that. It's always interesting. But the first college football playoff rankings came out. No surprise, Alabama number one, Clemson two, Michigan three. The big surprise, Texas A&M got the four slot, beating out undefeated Washington. Causing all this mayhem. All these people are furious, right? What the hell? Texas A&M's lost a game, lost at Alabama. They don't deserve there. Washington deserves to be there. Washington's five, Ohio State six. My whole point of this is relax. It'll work itself out. It always does. Texas A&M has many hard games left in the schedule. They play in the SEC. All conference games almost left. It'll work itself out. If Washington's a real deal, run the table. Their strength of schedule hasn't been harder than Texas A&M to this point. Run the table. I think they're good enough to run the table. Michigan still has to play Ohio State. It'll all figure out there. Ohio State has to play at Nebraska this weekend. Very tough game. Relax. It's early in the season. No need to go crazy. It'll work itself out. All right. Well, I think that's about it. I think that's the end of the show. And hit me up on RametownRiot@gmail.com or on Twitter, RametownRiot. Let me know how I did. You know, my first time in a solo act, I thought it was fun. It went pretty smooth, I figured, and kind of what I expected. But if you have any questions, anything you guys wanted to talk about, any fantasy news, all these things, hit us up. We are all diehard fantasy football players. And any stardom, sit-em questions, let us know. Thanks, everybody, for joining the Rametown Riot. And next week, hopefully we'll be back with me and Bob Show.
Sirens in a tear on me. No ghost, no 16 bit like Sega Genesis. RG ball on the board, soundtrack on the track. Gemini on the job, set the G on the G, set a green for the green, free chillin'. And I'm back on my thing for the listeners.